The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Burning in Hell.
Also, when I'm looking at my phone, I'm not like sexting. I have notes.
It'd be crazy if that's what I thought. Are you a big sexter?
I can. When I was like in long distance and in puppy dog phase.
I'm a zero sexter. That's not my jam.
What happened to you at a younger age?
You know what happened? I'll tell you what happened. I used to be on AIM and I would like I met someone, I was like 13. met someone on a chat room. Who knows what it was? And we were like sexting. I mean really clunky.
Yes.
Like I remember once around the holidays, I just remember at one point just like her saying something about like, oh, my candy, putting the candy can on my...
If it was a her.
Let's see. Yeah, who knows? But then one day I logged on and there was another account. My account was Mamma Mia 820 because I saw Mamma Mia on Broadway and I had a great time. and the account was like, do you accept a message from fuck Mamma Mia 820? And I was like, oh, what's this? And it was like, I'm the brother of the person you've been sexting, and if I ever hear from him, I'm gonna fucking kill you. And I like closed the laptop, and I remember I was like 13 years old, just my heart like, you know when you close the laptop and you're like, did that make it go away? Is this world over? Is that person gone? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's the reason, but I do have a suspicion that something about that made me go, you know what, sexting is...
And I haven't been able to come since, so... No, but that kind of stuff traumatizes you.
What do you say? I don't talk like with sexting. Like I'm not cock. I don't say cock. And penis is too clinical. Dick is too cat. Well, I don't know what like.
It's a creative journey. It's not a science. And I always say with sexting, it's about the adjectives. It's about the fill in words. You have to write like you're writing an essay that has to hit a certain amount of words. If you're just like I want to touch your dick, no. You want to touch what kind of dick? How big? What how kind of pulsating? Dick? How whatever?
Do you tell your fiance, like, I'd like a dick that's slightly different than yours, I think.
Describe the dick you want. But you manifest the dick you want, not the dick you have.
How long of things are you writing? You're writing like...
You just have to be very descriptive. Like even my hand, like the kind of like my soft hand on your heart pulsating, whatever. Like that's what it is.
Oh my God.
It's not about cocker or schlong.
Schlong. Schlong that's is what I good. Would say, but schlong's too funny.
But I do have to say, I have that with watching porn with my fiance. We can't watch it because we just start laughing.
Really?
Yeah.
We tried recently. First, my girlfriend said, you know, you wanted me to search. So I did my usual search, which is women who look like my girlfriend. and then I gave it to her. And then like 3 hours later, she had narrowed it down to like 5 categories. And I was like, honey, it's getting late. We need to pick this.
The picking is hard because I also was like, you go, but then you're going to get jealous. So then he's like, whatever you want. And then I'm feeling like he's going to judge me for what I want. And then we click something random and just started laughing. And I was like, I can't fucking do this. But anyway... We have a very special guest on today.
Hello.
You're so perfect for this for many reasons.
That's amazing it took you so long to have me then.
It is. But I mean, I was waiting for your TikTok to get a little bigger. And I know, I'm just kidding.
No.
But I have noticed.
We know the game.
You have great momentum right now. And I felt like the devil has aligned you to sit here today. Gianmarco Ceresi.
Hello.
Did I say it right?
You're adding a little theater flair.
I know.
I did
spirit
great.
Fingers.
You're Italian.
I'm half Sicilian.
Half Sicilian?
I am.
Sicilian too, somewhere in there.
You're half something too?
I don't know if I'm half.
Okay.
I don't know how Italian I am. My dad raised me to think I was 100%.
What's with, even if you're like 5% Italian, you love being Italian? Like I told everyone I was full Italian when I was younger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what we do. That's why I say on stage, my dad's a quarter Italian, which makes me 100% Italian.
Yeah, that's the math really of it. It's so fucking funny. But I want to get some hot goss just initially, because you are one of the hardest working and funniest comedians out there, in my opinion, IMO. And I'm not just trying to suck up to you, because you have done so many things, from acting to voiceover to writing, blah, blah, blah. And also, when I see you at certain clubs, other comics are talking about dick jokes and you're literally on your laptop, who knows, putting together a script, who knows, something more important.
Figuring out the porn search for that night from your
girlfriend. You're never doing actual work on your laptop. You're just like, how to talk to other comedians. But I want to know the hot goss. You starred in Hustlers.
Starred. Starred. My role was man in glasses.
You had lines and a full...
I had a line.
You had a line... And it was a good one. You were one of the guys that got drugged by Jennifer Lopez.
No, I said no. They were trying to drug me.
Oh.
And I said, my line was, I'm sorry, I have an early morning. Which
did she not drag you out at the end?
No, she tried to give me a shot. And I was like, I'm sorry, I have an early morning. And then I left the bar.
Okay.
Which, no way.
I love how there's so much motive behind your character. Why did he do that? What was happening in his life?
Oh, I had it all. I had like my whole like... I mean, I was myself. It was man in glasses. So I was like, I got to go on my laptop and work on stand-up.
Yes.
That's what was going through my head.
Perfect. And you were great in it. I initially was like, oh my God, it's my friend. But this was like a blockbuster. This was like one of the biggest movies at the time. What was it like getting the role, filming it? What was Jennifer Lopez like? Give us the tea.
I mean, it was no callback, one audition. So it was like, I found out like 2 months after I auditioned. So I was in a Starbucks by the Grizzly Pear at the time. And I didn't know how big it was going to be, but I guess J-Lo was very exciting. And it was one of those, they called me at 10 a.m. I don't think we shot until 1:13 a.m. in the next, you know, the next day.
Shut the fuck up.
Everyone was tired. People were getting cranky. Oh. And I think like J-Lo had to do a lot of costume changes that day. Uh-huh. So people were nervous. She's such a big star.
Yes.
Everyone just doesn't want to upset her. But she was nice. She came in. She like stood right next to me. Her thigh was pushing up against my thigh. I didn't know if it was like it was cramped or she was like doing the character. Like she was like
or she was
flirting
trying to
with
fuck
me.
You.
Maybe trying to fuck me. This was pre Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
And after like 30 minutes, there was that awkward thing with like super famous people where she's like, hi, I'm Jennifer. And I pretend like, Jennifer, you said? I'm John Marco.
With a J? Was it Jennifer?
And then we did like two takes. It happened so fast. All I wanted was someone to say, hey, good job. That's all I wanted was someone to be like, you got it.
Yeah.
But no one said anything to me. I was just excused. And I was praying I didn't get cut. I mean, that is a line that could get cut easily.
Yeah.
And I brought a date to watch the movie. I went on a first date and we went to Nighthawk.
So you don't know till you see it. You don't get messaged like, hey, you're good?
It was, no, I didn't. I didn't know if I was in it. And it was very corny to bring a date to a movie that I'm in, but mm-hmm. it's very brief.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it would be cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was. I think she found it quite lame. I was in it. I was in it. I've done it a couple times on a plane. Someone's been next to me watching Hustlers. And I went like, right as it happened, I was like, hey, but I'm wearing the mask. So they're like, what are you doing? And then I take off the mask. I'm like, and then the airline attendant's like, put the mask back on. And I'm like, oh, I'm just trying to.
And then you get kicked off the plane. Oh my gosh. So J-Lo has a powerful big dick energy to her.
Yes, she's just a star. I mean, you can't tell whether you're putting it on the person.
Yeah.
But when she walked in the room, I mean, she's just like stunning.
Yeah.
And she's a woman.
Yeah.
And she's tall and she was wearing a great outfit and it was quite a thing.
Yeah, and she was like all over you in the scene, which is...
Yeah, and I had to say no. I kept trying to improvise. Like, what if we rewrote and I went home with them?
Oh my God. Well, so right now, where is your focus in terms of content creation? Because unfortunately, you're one of those people that are talented in a wide array of things, from acting to musical theater to comedy to writing. You don't want to half-ass 100 things. So where is your focus
the singing
right now?
The singing's dead. I've been booked to sing 3 times in my whole life since I graduated from musical theater.
Yep.
And they've all been for my grandparents' funeral. And it's sad because it means I only have one concert left.
And
it's my farewell
And it's your
tour.
Mom that keeps booking you.
Yeah. She says I'm a nice reminder this thing's worse than death. So singing is done.
You're killing it, no pun intended.
I'm focusing on stand-up. I want to be great at something. That's all I want. That's all I've ever wanted.
Mm-hmm.
At first, it was musical theater. I'm going to be the greatest singer. I'm going to be as good as Pavarotti. I mean, in my head, I was like, as good as Pavarotti, even though I didn't really like opera. And then I used to sing like 3 hours a day, like not even in a good way, overtraining. We've talked about this. Yep. You did sports. I did singing.
Yeah.
And I would spend 3 hours a day in college in a practice room. And I hit like my biological limit. The same way people hit their limit in like sports, there's a limit of like, I keep referencing our podcast, The Downside.
Oh, yeah. I was on The Downside. Please listen. It was an epic episode.
We talked about sports. I think we're both ambitious people. And with singing, I was like, I'm going to be the greatest singer. And then that kind of went away. I'm going to be the greatest actor. And I don't think I have the talent. And then I finally hit stand-up, and it was just one of those areas. I'm like, oh, I think I can be great at this. And I don't know if it's just another thing I'm going to fail out in a couple years and then move on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think stand-up's the thing.
But I also think that your experience in musical theater and acting has made you into kind of the special stand-up that you are. And you also had a pretty cool like New York City accomplishment in stand-up where you got passed at the Comedy Cellar.
I passed at the Comedy Cellar. And the moment you get passed, all you're nervous about is, am I ever going to get spots there again?
Well,
every
I heard
week.
The most nerve-wracking moment is like the first 3 weeks after you get passed.
Yeah. Well, that's what they say. And then you get to the fourth week and you go, oh, this is just as bad as the first three. And so, you know, it goes in waves. Now, I think the only solution to the anxiety of being overly dependent on these places is immediately the moment you get somewhere trying to be too busy for that thing.
Mm.
So now I'm like, oh, I want to be busy on the road headlining, so much so that the sellers, oh, sure, if I'm around. And I think that helps sometimes. It also prevents you from ever enjoying any one accomplishment.
That is kind of my fucked up situation where, so you know, sometimes you can't stop obsessing over something that's pissing you off or you're upset about. The only way I can ever move on is to get upset about something else.
Yes.
Because your brain is stimulated by negative emotions. So you just, it's like when you can't get over an ex, find someone new that you can't get over and you'll get over that other ex.
Mm-hmm.
So that was toxic advice that we're just throwing out on the pod.
But you gotta, I don't know, I'm trying to deal with, I have bad envy.
Ooh.
And I realized recently, especially getting past the Cellar, where it was like, I'm on more and more shows where, I mean, this is arrogant to say, where I'm not going to be the best one on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Or everyone on the show is a killer.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize I have to figure out a way to respond to seeing good comedians other than, everything I've ever done is worthless. My jokes are terrible. I have to fix it.
And because, that is a very black and white way of thinking from like, I'm the greatest to being like, I'm the worst who ever did stand up.
Yeah. And I thought about my favorite comedians, whether it be like Jeselnik or John Mulaney. And I was like, oh, well, they're on lineups where everyone's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still amazing. Mm-hmm. It's like you have to talk to yourself like a child to work through childish emotions.
Reparent yourself. What would you want a parent
for the first time, dear God.
But I also think what I always tell myself, because I have a weird like false sense of confidence, even in situations that I shouldn't, where I'm very like, well, I'm me.
Mm.
And I think especially, I think you have a very specific voice on stage that is unique. So it's like, yeah, some people might like that color sweater, but it's not my color sweater.
Yes.
I don't know why I went to fashion, but.
You have false confidence?
I joke like I have reverse bio dysmorphia. I think everyone wants to fuck me. Like I am overconfident in some, but I'm like very underconfident in other situations. But like first time I did stand up was like in front of 300 people. I did 10 minutes, which like that's just not okay.
Sure.
But like no one told me not to. So I was just like, wah-huh.
Yeah. But I feel like you like respect, you know, obviously you've had this like jump. You're headlining these clubs, but I feel like I see you doing shitty shows with me.
Oh,
and like
we've
that's
done,
the sign of the thing.
We've bombed on the same shows.
But that's the sign of the thing. It's like, are you willing to do? Well, I mean, we just saw this thing with T.I. at the Barclays Center. I don't know if you're trying to get him on the pod. Did you see this?
No.
So T.I. is a rapper.
Yes.
He's been getting into stand-up.
And wait. Continue.
Oh, yeah. So he's been going on up in L.A. And of course, because he's T.I., he goes up at the comedy store and he's like blowing the light like crazy. Ah. Someone got this picture where someone snuck behind the curtain to like grab at him, like, please get off stage, because he was going 20 minutes.
Yeah,
over,
and he's
whatever.
Not like Chris Rock. Who's
yeah.
Earned-
yeah, it's not like that. Like, yeah. that's Chris Rock. That's yeah. the highest level.
Like, the audience loves that Chris Rock is doing an hour on a Wednesday night show.
Yeah, and even at the comedy store, like, everyone in the main room are stars.
Mm-hmm.
So T.I. was doing that. He did some open mics. He got some kind of tussle. Some comedian made fun of him for, or said, addressed the sexual abuse allegations against him, and he snapped at them. But bottom line is, he recently performed at the Barclays Center on like a big showcase show, and he got booed. And he got booed because it was bad. He was in L.A. People were laughing. He's famous, blah, blah, blah. And then Barclays, they booed. And it was just beautiful. It's just beautiful to see someone get their comeuppance.
That is amazing. And yes, you're right. There's a difference. I think I very early on had a lot of friends in stand up who told me, like, if you want to get into this, like, we actually believe that you have like a natural skill, but you need to fucking grind. You need to. I was told once, never say no to a show. Yeah. And I've like lived my life by that. Unless I'm like traveling, I will always say yes to a show.
Good, good.
And I feel like I have that confidence where I'm like, if I put in the work in this particular thing in my life, I believe in myself. Where there's other things, similar to how you're talking about singing, like tennis, I would train insane amounts and I would still not believe in myself on the court. And I feel like it's kind of just the universe being like, some things you're meant to do.
Well, that's why I think comedy is tricky, because like, you perform sometimes for shows where maybe no one knows you, and then you perform on the road, you might have a lot of fans there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's got to be tough, because it would be like if you played tennis and sometimes you played against a fan who let you win.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how do you know to get better? How do you, I mean, it's tough.
Well, that's why like during the week I am doing all the small shows, and that's when you know jokes that other people were laughing at aren't hitting with this audience, and they're not a bad audience. They're actually just like, that's where the weakness is.
This is why I've avoided having any kind of fans.
Yes.
And I plan to keep on that so I can keep the comedy
but
strong.
But also sometimes it's weird when you go on stage, the first couple minutes are kind of just staring at you.
Yeah.
And they're not like consuming it. They're just like, oh, that's the girl we saw on a TV.
Sure.
So it gets awkward. And then like, it's an hour. Like, people aren't going to suck my dick for a whole hour.
Yeah.
Dick sucking
for
an hour is exhausting.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of, and I also have that kind of chip on my shoulder where I'm like, it's easy for people to be like, oh, well, she has followers, so she's getting people. So I have that chip on my shoulder where it's like, I want to actually be fucking good at this.
Good.
Which is my own issues.
Yeah.
That I'm working through. But I also think with you, you've been taking advantage of social media and recently blown up, because you're not like, you didn't discover something new to make you like way funnier in comedy. This year, you've been popping off on TikTok.
Mm.
Have you enjoyed being on social media?
It's a little exhausting now, mm-hmm. but it's paying the bills.
Mm.
Facebook, Snapchat, even YouTube.
Oh,
I think what benefited me is I wrote a lot, so I had a big backlog of very pure jokes.
Yes.
And so when quarantine hit, I didn't invent the TikTok style of just front facing, say a joke with the captions,
mm-hmm.
but I had a wealth of
yes.
jokes to do that I'm still getting through.
Yes.
And so those started popping off. And then I started realizing, as Instagram came out with Reels and Facebook and Snapchat and YouTube Shorts, that it was like, I realized, you know how Seinfeld went to Hulu? They made $500 million. Then it went to Netflix and made another. I was like, oh, this is my content library. And I can just, every time there's a new platform, I can just move this to that platform. I don't have to do anything. And I just get to get all the spoils of a new audience.
But it's also like, that's work you had put in that you didn't really know what to do yet. Or you thought it was just like, oh, I'm just writing to write. Like, it's like I had 6 years of tweets that I started to look through them, and I was like, that's a TikTok.
I just went through, this is so great.
Wait, your tweets are so fucking funny.
I went through all of them. I downloaded
like
the archive.
That's what you have to do.
And it took months to get through this fucking thing.
And you canceled yourself a couple times?
Canceled myself a couple times. I don't have too many. My tweets are more embarrassing of like my actor days, where I was very sincere. And I was like, a lot of like, come see my Fringe play and how amazing things are. I was so sincere.
There is a joke with the actor community where actors are are like, they do that you know, breath in.
They breathe. That's how cruel comedians are. Actors always with
inhale. Actors are fucking in and out and in and out. It's like, we get it. You fucking act. But they go, and they're like, I'm going to be a star. Where I feel like comics are like, oh, that was fucking horrible. Even if they like murder. How have you navigated the mindset of sometimes actors like kind of believing they're all that and they just haven't gotten the right shot, to comics who think they all suck and they're trying their best?
We're allergic to sincerity, which makes it challenging because obviously we love it.
Or we don't want to feel real feelings, where actors are all about feelings.
Absolutely. But comics, they're willing to put themselves through one of the worst lives ever. So they do love it. And if sometimes you see people hating on comedy, and I hate on it too, where you're like, but you love this thing. You're lying.
It's all you have.
You're lying. It's all you have. And comedians will always shit on actors.
Yes.
And then they will drop their whole stand-up career the moment they get a shitty small role in a sitcom. And they'll be awful at it because they don't know how to act. Comedians love dismissing good acting. Yeah. Like, comedians aren't notoriously for being some of the worst actors.
Or they'll be like, I act every night. I'm on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sure. Sure.
But I love that you break the mold. Everyone has to follow him on Twitter. Like, my fiance and I send your tweets to each other because we're both comics, and you have some very niche comedy jokes
that
people, they will do well, but like, the masses are not appreciating.
I know.
You said, oh my God, after the Will Jada thing, you were like, canceling my roast battle with Jada Pinkett Smith. I cried. I cried out loud.
Thank you.
Are you ever afraid, though, that you're too niche? Or you made like some JFL joke?
I made a JFL joke. No, I think you have to do a couple niche. But yes, there is a shift where you're like, oh, I need to stop
making your
posting
friend comics
to,
laugh.
Yeah, that's not my audience.
Yeah.
My friends have never paid to see me. Not once.
You're like, they're not. Might get one repost for my friend Bob, who he's not doing well, you know?
So, like, that is definitely a shift in approach. Because you want comedians to like you. Mm-hmm. What do they say about the great comic stories? Like, oh, they're the comedians.
Comics. But a lot of comics are not the ones making the most money.
That's true.
Which is part of being an artist, you know?
But I think it's fine to have a little niche here and there.
Where I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah, it's fun.
What is your level of anxiety and depression? How are we? What's going on?
It's gotten better. I've never taken I tried Lexapro. I have depression and anxiety.
Yes.
Bad sleep problems, terrible sleep.
I feel like that's kind of your look.
That's kind of a look.
That's
I get a lot of comments like, are you okay? I get all these comments all the time. I'm like, I don't know. I'm tired. Like, that's not helping,
like,
for sure.
Tired and disheveled is kind of your vibe, I feel like.
Yes, I've embraced that. And it's tough because my girlfriend has these night terrors now. And so it's like, sleep is just a nightmare.
Or you just decide we don't sleep well and that's our thing. Like, you're yelling, I'm in my head, we do it together.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't get a good night's sleep, huh? And I'm like, yeah, she was screaming all night. She thought a murderer was under the bed, and then I had anxiety about my career for 3 hours. I take Ambien sometimes. I take Ambien, which is lovely.
Do you ever tweet on Ambien?
No, I don't have that like, stay awake.
You might have to be a little drunk to do it. I had a friend during the Facebook days who, like, in the morning we'd be like, she was on Ambien last night on Facebook and we need to do some damage control.
Oh my God.
Like, just saying random shit to people.
I'm always terrified that I'm going to die in my sleep, so I take very little amounts.
What is there a better way to die than in your sleep?
Yeah.
Is that how you want to die?
Maybe. Sometimes the onstage death sounds pretty cool.
Oh, like while you're performing?
Yeah, yeah.
There was this one comic, Heather, you watched her faint on TV. I mean, on a video.
Oh, she passes out, falls backwards?
She faints and like hit her head. And it was like so scary. And my OCD was like, don't see this.
Yeah.
Don't see this.
Yeah.
And be scared of it. Don't see it.
I would like it to be, I finish standing ovation. I jump to do a crowd surf. And as I leap in the air, die. And so they're just carrying my dead body for like a long time. And inside they're like, when is he going to tell us, like, you know, bring him back to the stage? But no. So yes, I would like my corpse to be crowd surfed and to die that way. Have you ever crowd surfed?
No,
it's very cool.
I'm
I think it's
boring.
Tougher for women. I think it's tougher for
gets
women because
handsy.
Every guy's like
gets a little handsy.
People are just guiding you by your tits. And ass.
Oh God, yeah. I watched a documentary. Speaking of on a flight of what was that? One of these old festivals where they're just like the women. Everyone was assaulted. The whole festival.
Sure.
Because everyone's drunk, and then they're just carrying you around, and it's a scary time out here.
So depression, anxiety. I'm always keeping my ear to the ground. Do I need antidepressants? But I'm doing okay. The problem is I'm very functional. I might be very depressed.
Same-sies.
But like I'm never not going to go to the gym. I'm never not going to I'm not going to sit on the couch. Something in me goes like, you got to do.
So even though you
something.
Have no sleep, you'll be able to get up.
Yeah.
Oh, so that anxiety,
the anxiety
is getting
is,
you.
Is keeps me go.
Because
I mean,
you are
it's
very
real
fit.
Balance.
You're very fit. You almost look like a cross country star.
Really? Oh, thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Or like one of
shit.
Those guys that jump over the beam.
Oh yes, I like that.
A decathlete.
A decathlete.
Decathlete. That was very. It's a thing.
I believe you. You know the athletics. I've never been athletic. It was later in life I got in shape.
And, that's good.
What happened, I did P90X in college, which was great. But then I started like losing it a little bit. And then I had my roommate, a gay friend of mine that I went to college with. I walk around in my underwear a lot. I'm like a borderline nudist in that way. And
the second you get home, you have to strip.
And I Oh, I'm definitely, God. And once I have curtains, no more clothes. And my roommate, I said to him, I don't know why, I may have like, maybe there was a video or something, but I said to him, I said, I'm in good shape, right? And he couldn't respond. And I went to my room and I cried and cried. And I'm like, this is like 23. And and then he came in and he was like, listen, you're not in bad shape. It's just that, you know, if I mean, he it felt, and I don't think he was being cruel. No. I think he was being a good friend.
He was being honest.
He was like, if you think you're in like good shape, you're not, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But just here's the reality compared to what you think is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like I do Barry's boot camp where there's a lot of gay guys who are in amazing shape.
Yes.
And it's kind of funny because, like, I didn't bully gay people in high school, but I imagine they were bullied in high school, and now they get to bully all these out of shape straight guys. Like, run faster, you
they're just
fucking.
Like, ew.
But you see, I mean, I cannot get over when you see these pictures from Fire Island, and it's like 50 of the same gay guy.
Abercrombie and Fitch
have a
models.
Six-pack because I'm like, what happens if you put on a little weight? Do they say, hey, you're not invited this weekend anymore?
There's a lot of pressure.
Because we all wanted to fuck, and no one wants to fuck you anymore.
But, I mean, I guess there are some guys that are attracted to, like, bigger guys or thin guys.
Of course.
That is there. But I do know that I feel like the bar is so low for a straight guy to be considered hot in the straight community.
Sure, sure.
So from a gay man's gaze, you were subpar. But for a girl, they probably were like, he's hot.
Sure. And thank God.
And you're tall.
Thank God.
You're tall. You don't have to do shit. You don't even have to have a personality.
I don't know if that's 100% true. I've been saying, I think like, first of all, I like never really hit on women. I'm very shy in that way.
Mm.
And the women who would hit on me, like outright, would be the tallest women you've ever seen.
Mm.
And I should have been a WNBA recruiter because I'd walk around and the tallest women would see me like, finally a tall man.
Yeah.
And so every time I went out, you'd see me and like three tall women hitting on me.
Like that, mosquitoes to a light.
Yeah. Someone from Guinness World Records seeing which one was the tallest. But, and that's never been like, I've never been, I was going to say tall queen. Like, I've never been in, I've never been like, oh, I want a tall.
Mm-hmm.
Some guys are, you know how they say men are either like legs guy, butt guy, or boobs guy. And I know it's offensive to minimize men like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never, like my dad's a legs. Like he talks about legs.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, she's got legs for days. Because that's how you have to measure legs in days. Sounds like a deformity to be like, oh my God, he's got legs for feet.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Okay, wait. But you're in a relationship now.
I am. So I'm a girlfriend guy.
How did you approach her?
Once again, like this is like where it wasn't like an outgoing thing. It was like, it was COVID. I moved to the Lower East Side. Mm-hmm. She happened to move around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to her place. We had a mutual friend. She was giving away shit that the last apartment owner had left behind. And so I took it. And then we were just in the
COVID. We love an estate sale.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. We were just in the COVID like bubble. Every night we're hanging out to watch movies.
Very horny.
Yeah, and then like a lot of like sitting next to each other. And like one of those things of like, does she know her foot's on my dick? And you're like, yeah, probably. Probably she's conscious of that.
Oh, that's hot. Flirting. I used to do that with an old roommate. We'd be like watching something. And I'd like put my head on his shoulder. But straight guys are stupid. So they're kind of like, oh, she's really tired.
I once was on a date where it was like, it was clear this date was to have sex.
Yeah.
And I remember like after the whole dinner and drinks, I put my hand on her leg and she was like, finally. And I was like, oh my God, that's how bad I am at this. And she was like, Jesus Christ. God,
because she doesn't want to have to force you.
That's that. But that was my. I would be like, all right, the knee. Where's the knees? Does she move? Like that's my only radar.
You were overanalyzing
it. I was slow.
So you basically were like, do you want to lose a lot of nights of sleep with me? And she was like, yes, absolutely.
She was the one. I mean, her night terrors used to be so much worse.
Really?
We have an app that records them. Well, she was mugged. Oh. At she got night terrors. She was mugged at knife point, which is how we met. And that's his joke. But she was mugged. She fought. She fought the mugger off. She got her phone back. The mugger took her phone. She chased after him. Got the phone back. Went off. And I think it's a New York thing. She doesn't have night terrors on the plane if she's sleeping. Huh. We were just in Memphis with her family. Didn't really have night terrors then. So I think it's related to like New York.
That
and
makes sense.
She'll wake up and like sometimes it's emergency. Like she'll be like, oh, what was that? What was that? But then sometimes she wakes up and she says like shit about me. Mm. Like just mean stuff about me. Like complaining, like I didn't listen to her or I told you or we're late because of this. Uh-huh. It's coming from her subconscious. So you know
she's not conscious in it. Oh, so it's no. Like she's drunk and telling you her innermost feelings.
But her eyes will open. So she'll be like, I fucking told you. Fuck.
Well, that's really
and
good.
And sometimes I just sit there and I just watch it because she's not going to remember it. And I just kind of watch it. I'm like, yeah, I know, baby. It's okay.
Oh.
It's okay. She'll get scared about her glasses. She's woken up where like she's so scared she can't see without her glasses.
Yeah.
So she like wakes up and she's like hidden her glasses in her panties. Because she's like scared someone would take it.
Yeah.
So just all sorts of weird.
It's basically whatever you're dreaming, she's almost like doing it. Because like we all have dreams where you're like frustrated with someone and you say shit to them. It doesn't really make sense.
Yeah.
She's acting out. And what's weird is you can't, it must be a little hard on the relationship sometimes because you can't be like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like sometimes in the recording, especially early on, you'd hear me be very sweet. And I'm like, it's okay, baby. It's okay, baby.
Yeah.
And then like on like a bad night or if I'm like going on the road the next day.
You're like, not
I'm
today.
Like, I'm like, God, fuck Tova. Fuck, God damn it. And that's not good. But it's a lot. It's
no,
tough.
I know. Well, like it's like someone who snores. That causes.
Well, she snores too. It's
that
a
causes
lot. This
drama.
Is a fucking nightmare to sleep next to sometimes.
But society has normalized if you're in love, you have to sleep. Even though you're unconscious, you have to sleep in the same room.
I agree. And there's been a couple times we live so close to each other mm-hmm. that the night tours used to be a lot worse. They have gotten way better.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a couple times where I would say, like, sweetheart, I'm going to go home. And again, she doesn't remember any of this, but then she would like kind of be awake and get very sad and crying and blah, 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 blah. And then she'd forget it all the next day.
And so, you can't wake her out of it because bad things happen?
I don't know. It's just
is that
like,
a wives'
it'll
tale?
Be worse. I think it's a wives' tale. What's going to happen? It's like when you pull out like a memory card out of a computer. It's
yeah.
like, don't
do it.
You're like, but has anything ever happened? It's the same. It's the same with waking someone up. I don't think it affects them.
Does she ever get up and do stuff?
She's like stood up and like moved, again, the glasses or like moved a box here or there.
Emma Willman used to eat during her
oh my God.
Night walking. So she tied herself to her bed so she wouldn't eat peanut butter at night.
It's peanut butter.
Yeah, like just shoving peanut butter.
With her hand? Did she do like really like...
She said she'd wake up and her bed would be like a mess.
That's hilarious.
It's hilarious. It is hilarious. And she like was trying to be fit too. So she was like, this is just not helpful.
Sure.
Even though she was getting steps in at night. But it is interesting because like the nighttime does count as part of your relationship. But you could get real animosity towards someone in that kind of frustration. Like my fiance will get it. He doesn't like the sound of typing. So I'll be obviously doing emails in bed. And he's like, and I'm like, dude, I'm not going to go in another room when I'm in my comfortable position right now. Cause you don't like typing.
It's hard. My girlfriend, she's also very good at falling asleep. And like, I feel angry sometimes at how quickly, like I get jealous. There's a jealousy. Cause sometimes I cannot sleep. Mm-hmm. And those are the worst things.
And it's also probably hard to sleep knowing that at any moment she could turn to Voldemort.
Yeah. Yeah.
Being like, is it going to happen? Okay, good. I mean, do you think your sleep reflects your level of stress?
I think so. And like sometimes I try to remind myself, like when I'm like feeling really depressed, I'm like, you're tired.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, but I don't know what to do about it. I as I've gotten older, I've started waking up earlier, like on my own accord. I'm like, fuck,
yeah,
only 5 hours of sleep.
Yeah,
but I'm someone who like I've probably averaged 6.5 hours of sleep average for the last
decade.
Are you a coffee
guy?
What are you gonna do? Big coffee guy.
Big coffee guy.
I started stopping at like 5 p.m.
Okay.
One day I realized like a fucking moron. I was like, maybe I shouldn't have my last coffee was 7 p.m. That was like my line.
Yeah, you won't sleep.
And then one day I was like, maybe I should move this early.
You're like, my line is 10 p.m. Don't force me.
And
now you just drink espresso martinis.
And I felt like a moron. I was like, of course, you idiot.
Yeah, but then it's also like you want to be productive. So it's like, are you less productive? It's a whole thing.
But it's also interesting, like school. Like if I have to sit, like that's why I don't see a lot of theater. If I had to sit for 3 hours, I will fall asleep. So I need coffee before I go see a play.
I'll have trouble falling asleep too, but if I'm in a moving vehicle, I turn into a literal baby, and Dez will get annoyed because we'll be like driving somewhere and he's like, you're not going to have a conversation with me? And I'm like,
I do that.
And he's like, you're the worst. The second an airplane, the second it moves, I'm like,
I tell my openers now because, you know, they'll drive me somewhere and I tell them like, just so you know, on the way there, I'm going to sleep. I'm going to sleep. So
you're looking, and then they're like, we're at the hotel.
I'm like, if we're talking shit about comics, I'll be awake for that. But if you ask me about like how does TikTok work, I'm going to be out. I'm going to be out.
I feel like there's an understanding that if you're in that little Subaru, wherever you're going, and there's three or four comics, anything that's said...
Cars are crazy. It's so crazy because you talk so much shit. And then there's the realization where it's like, oh, people are talking shit about me on their car rides too. There's no way like I'm not part of other people's
Well, what I do is I try to subtly try to think of hear what they hear about if they throw it out about me. So you got to be subtle. You got to be like, oh yeah, well, oh yeah, what were they saying about
Has
people like
ever
that?
Said anything something about you?
I mean, I think the only like shit talking is people being like, oh Hannah, like is she for real kind of thing.
Sure.
And which like I totally get. So I'm like keeping my finger on the pulse of that. But then also you get to the point where you're like, you don't have to have people think you're for real or not.
You don't have to. All that matters is that you keep getting better. And
yes.
If you keep getting better, people go, that's one of the nice things about stand-up, where it's like, if you do good jokes, people can't deny that, or real comedians can't deny that.
Yeah.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
We're going to wrap this up with a final game that's going to get a little darker.
Ooh, please.
It's called the 7 Deadly Sins.
Mm.
7 Deadly Sins.
What are you greedy about?
I mean, when it comes to having a girlfriend, I'm trying to learn a lot of things about giving, and I'm very greedy. I'm just greedy about work. Mm-hmm. I'm greedy about work. And well, I was just visiting her family in Memphis, and it can be tough where like I did shows. That's greedy already. I wanted to do shows. So that's a little bit of greed already. And then it's like, do I need to write that day? Mm-hmm. Do I need to listen back to the set that day? And I can be very greedy with time. And it's endless. I could work all day.
Yeah.
And there's a balance between like, okay,
especially
but I am in a
relationship.
Especially
with content creation. It's like, there's no limit to how many videos you could create.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And there's no limit to jokes you can write. And when you love doing it, you're like...
And I come from a divorced, multiple divorced family. And like, there wasn't a lot of acts of affection or love between these. I had no role models for that. So there's a lot of like, can I get a gift without it being, without a gun to my head, without it being told? Can I go out of my way to think, oh, does this, so it's a lot of that. And I'm learning.
When you say multiple divorce, what does that mean?
My parents have both been divorced twice.
Oh, wow.
And then on stage, I say my dad's been divorced four times because he had long relationships that ended.
Yeah, and that's equally as hard as like a paper.
Yeah, but definitely just no functional. There was no witnessing of a functional relationship. They were all quite toxic.
Yeah, which has made you very funny.
Thank you. It was all worth it. Thanks, Dad.
I do think a lot of comics have that kind of intimacy issue where they've gotten so good at, instead of feeling the pain, making it funny, or instead of feeling the love or the lack of love, making it funny.
Yeah.
And then that's why dating comics can be hard.
Oh, absolutely.
You're like, that's me. Who are you envious of?
Ugh. I mean, so many comedians.
But I feel like you're so different than the other comics. I want to smack you right now. Like,
but even if it's different, like I'll just shout out to Daniel Simonson, who's an incredible comedian. But like, I remember he did my sketch team. We have a guest comic, and he did the show. And I'm sitting backstage, and he's murdering. And it's so unique. He's so unique. He talks about just like him, like his social discomfort, and like dives into it in this incredible way. And I'm backstage, and I'm like, fuck. I never talk about my social discomfort. I need to get more introspective. I need to think. I need to dive more. And I'm like having a full-on crisis. Like, ugh, I talk about going to college for musical theater. Who gives a flying fuck about that?
But that gave you a kick in the ass to like rethink some shit.
Sure. My therapist says all the time that it's such this mixed blessing, because it's like that envy and the anxiety also forces me to work so much harder and better and become good, but at the same time it makes me miserable. And I'm witnessing a great comic who someday will be hard to get tickets to, and I get to be there backstage, and he's a colleague.
But would you ever think that he might watch you and your outgoingness and one man show?
I never buy it.
And that he might be like, holy shit, I wish I could like bring the audience to that kind of excitement that guy does.
He needs to tell me more. But that's, when people tell me that, another one, Renan Hirschberg, who's like just crushes. And he said to me the other day, we were talking about a callback for something, and he was like, oh, well, you'll probably get it. You're a killer, or you do great, or something. And in my head, I was like, no, you don't like, you think I'm a hack, though. In my head, I'm just like, I don't believe it.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's hard, and it moves. I remember in the acting days where like I would trust a teacher, and when like there was a couple teachers in my life that if they told me good job, it would go right to my heart and I would get emotional. I'd feel like I believe them. Mm-hmm. And it's hard with comedy because we know from the lies that we've told to people that we barter in insincerity all the time, and or you respect it but you don't actually like it. Like, I think what you do admire, what you know is true, is when a comic goes like, you do well, and they're like, fuck you. Like, if their response is that same envy, and they're like, shit, that's what you believe.
Yes.
It's like when I know that.
When you get a gift and someone goes, oh my God, I love it, they hate it. But if they go, oh, you know they really like it, because it's a weird reaction. I was just thinking about that. Anyway.
If I got off stage and John Mulaney was like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you. I'd be like, yes! And that'll be on my website. Fuck you. John Mulaney says, go fuck yourself.
Go fuck yourself. I feel like the comics I love are the ones who are most different to me. Like, I love Rory Scovel.
Uh-huh.
He's one of my favorite people. And I watched his special being like, I could never go on stage and just say anal 20 times and for it to seem genius.
Yeah.
People would be like, she's stupid. And so that's why I appreciate him. Or even fucking your favorite
Jeselnik?
Jeselnik. Like, yeah. He's so different than me. And instead of, like, the envy, you're just like, holy shit, that's incredible that he does what he does.
Well, let me ask, since you've listed men, see, I feel it feels easier for me to admire women.
That's a possibility.
Because I'm like, well, I can't do that.
That's a possibility. I do think...
Do you ever feel envy? Who, I mean...
I feel envy in a way of like, oh, I know that's what I want to do. Cause like, I, like, for example, Taylor Tomlinson is like killing it and we're good friends. And I'm just like, I'll literally just send to my manager. I'd be like, look what she did. Like that's what, let's manifest some of that shit kind of thing. And I feel lucky that I like talk to her about shit.
Wait, I think that's funny that you tell your manager, let's manifest, when you're like, let's, you get this fucking done for me.
Call it manifesting,
let's
which means
manifest. Let's send.
Let's make some
email.
Deals. Let's make some fucking deals. But I'm also very anti, like, looking at someone's career and copying it, because I feel like
totally.
It, like, we don't even know the shit that can happen in our careers with like new technology and all that shit. But no, I felt a lot of envy with tennis. A lot of envy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I, like, my dad would be like, "Why can't you play like that girl?" And that shit would ruin me. So then I've like had to do a lot of work on envy. And also sometimes envy is just like changing the perspective. Like, I guess that's what I'm saying, is you change the story in your head. Instead of being like, Daniel Simonson's a genius that I can never do, be like, Daniel Simonson is a genius that does stuff I can never do because I'm really good at other things.
Sure. I mean, you listen, you seem to, I think the tennis gave you such a, because you, I've heard you talk about it on my podcast, other podcasts.
Yeah.
You just seem to have
it's a
healthy
pain
relationship
point for me.
With that.
The fucked up shit that I got through has helped me like have a better perspective on this. Also, it's just for me now. Before, I had all this other pressure of other people.
Yeah.
And obviously we can put so much pressure on ourselves, but I feel like a freedom I didn't have to mess up in tennis that I feel like I can mess up in comedy.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Which sounds like painful and scary. But
no,
like,
I think that's like the artistic attitude, because again, there's this thing as I go forward, it's you want to explore and expand, and that means bombing sometimes. That means taking risks that don't always pan out.
Yeah, like if I saw you bomb. Oh wait, continue.
Yeah, I could kill a 15 minute every time. I'm at that place where I have that 15 minutes, but then that's all you're doing, and so it is really hard to overcome. And I think it's hard at every level. Like, I think Bill Burr, who's, you know, thought of as one of the greatest comics alive right now, like, you'll see him go up and bomb. And I don't think it's easier for him. Mm-hmm. Maybe he has more assurance, like, people realize I'm great. Mm-hmm. So they know that this is not the best I can do. Mm-hmm. But it's still hard. It's hard to have everyone having a great time and being like, I'm going to make everyone have a worse time right now. And I'm not going to do the best that I could do right now.
But it becomes, because you know, long term, you have to work on that new material. Like, I was about to say, if I saw you bomb, I'd be like, oh, fuck, he's working on some new shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's on that new shit. And I got to the point where my fiance, because he's a comic, started to tell me, he's like, if you're not bombing sometimes, you're not working.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm sick of hearing you, like, doing well. It's like, yeah, no shit. You're doing your best 15 minutes.
Sure.
Every time. Like, who gives a fuck?
And I think that's one of the problems with the comedy scene right now. I think there's so many comics. It's so competitive. And clubs, you kind of have to kill, or some clubs will just stop working you. And mm-hmm. I do think it's detrimental to the artistic process. It does not feel like there's clubs these days. I mean, unless you're one of their favorites where you get to work there every night and they understand that you might even walk some people sometimes. They'll be like, it's okay. Mm-hmm. These clubs are like, you walked. We only had two audience members tonight. You walked them. Yeah. We had to close.
Yeah.
So I think it's in a tough place right now.
I'm fortunate that one of the places I work, one of the managers pulled me aside and they were like, hey, you don't be afraid to bomb. Because I think I was being like very perfectionist and they saw that I was like not trying.
That's good management. That's very nice.
And to have a club kind of be like, yo, it's all good. But obviously, like, one new person walks in or a comic you respect, and then you're like, back to the old material.
It's the comics. The further you get, it's like, I don't care about the audience. It's the comics. One comic walks in, I'm like, they have to know. They must know.
But meanwhile, they're just like running through their own set in their head and they haven't listened to anything.
Exactly. Now that I have openers, I think if they get nervous if they do badly, I'm like, oh, brother, I was not paying attention to a second.
People will ask me, like, oh, do you like that opener? I go, I've never heard any of my openers ever. I like if they're a good hang. And you could tell if the audience is like super disturbed after,
but
like pretty much I don't listen. What are you gluttonous about? What do you overindulge in?
I mean, it's weird to think of like work as gluttony, but I don't know. It feels like a cop-out answer. That's one of those, like, what's my fault? I'm too honest.
Yeah.
What's my glutton? I
just, like, so organized. Hard. In school, were you a straight-A student?
I was like an A minus. Like, I was like the medium in the advanced classes.
Yeah.
I didn't care quite enough.
Yeah.
I'm gluttonous. I mean, I guess I like to snack a lot, but it's all healthy.
What kind of healthy snacks?
Like, I'll have like a bag of baby carrots every day.
That's adorable. Do you do like almonds?
I do a lot of almonds.
No salt?
Unsalted.
Yep.
Unsalted.
I'll do,
my girlfriend hates it.
I'll do full like smokehouse barbecue. I'm like, this is the most unhealthy thing. You know when they put that shit outside it?
Sure,
sure. Fuck me up.
I've been getting so into frozen grapes. It like fucking rocks my world. I'm really into like ice. I used to eat snow cones plain.
Oh.
Like if I will have a plain snow cone because I like the texture and mm-hmm. I like the cold to the melt.
Mm-hmm.
That's my jam.
So you're that kid that was like licking the snow.
Yes, absolutely. all the
Everyone
snow
else
cone
is
people know
having
me.
An athletic game of, you know, throwing snowballs and you're just like.
Every snow cone person I go to, I say, can I have a plain? And then I go, how much? And they go, you can just have it. And I give them,
and
you know.
Don't come back
don't
around
come
these
back.
Parts, okay?
Really,
when was the last time you experienced extreme wrath? So how is your, is it something that you occasionally just blow up or all the time are you angry at shit?
I'm a subway, like I'm the guy on the subway platform where if something happens, I will go, fuck, God! Fucking God, fucking damn it. And I realize I'm a big man, so sometimes people get scared. And I don't like to see people feel fear around me.
Yeah.
But recently, I was in Indianapolis. I was at a Helium Comedy Club, and I got thrown out of a Starbucks. And I don't think I was yelling this time, but I felt like it was like a New Yorker moment where it was something where I thought I had used stars to buy like a fancy, expensive drink.
Wait, you are a Karen.
Oh, God. Yes, sure. No, but I was thrown out. Karens don't get thrown out. Karens get filmed and shamed online. And it was like they said they used my stars, then they didn't. I went back to return the drink, essentially. And they said, oh, we don't accept stars here. And I said, oh, well, I asked to use the stars. I wouldn't have gotten the drink if I didn't ask. And the barista was like, no, you didn't. And I instinctively...
Now you're calling me a liar.
Instinctively, I went, yes, I did. And the other employee was like, I am not going to have you yell at my employees. And that's when I felt like I'm not in New York anymore because I did not
yell. That was not a yell.
Now, and this is a road thing where I do think like I bring a new... What's appropriate in New York is not appropriate everywhere else. I was in an airport in Appleton and the airplane got delayed for the second time.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, fuck! And the in an airport. And the woman at the desk turned to me and went, behave yourself! And she left... And then later, I'm like, go to the gate to check into the new flight. And a police officer comes over. And I'm wearing my mask, thank God, because he goes, all right, so here's what's going to happen. If you have another outburst, I'm going to have you removed from this airport. If you resist, if you resist arrest, we will put you on the no-fly list and you will never fly another United flight in your entire life. And I'm like, in my soul, I'm like raging.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say something like, sorry, sir, I'm from New York where, you know, we express our anger rather than taking it out at home on our wives. And I didn't, but it was a moment, you know, a moment where, and I've only had a couple of these moments in my life, thankfully, and this is privilege, where I was like, this could fuck up my life really bad.
Yeah.
I need to calm down because my dad was a yeller. My dad screamed at everything. He lost it in public. He would take it out on waiters, which I don't do.
Mm-hmm.
Customer service, sometimes. Mm-hmm. I am one of those people. But lots of rage, lots of wrath.
I love it because like your quick-wittedness is so good for comedy, but could also definitely get you on a no-fly list so easily.
But like when you get angry... especially with comedy, like I can tell an audience member like shut the fuck up in a funny way, but once in a while you'll feel that anger come out. There's nothing funny about it. There's nothing funny about real anger. And one of the earliest shows I ever did, like a year in, there was like some women like talking bad. And some woman was heckling the whole show. And at the end I said, I hope you get hit by a car, you fucking cunt. And I felt the room go, and it was so funny because no one cared about the, I hope you get hit by a car, which is the violent thought. Everyone just cared that I called her a cunt.
Yep.
And
which
and
in Europe is just normal.
Just normal. It's what you call your mom.
Yeah.
So a lot of wrath, a lot of rage. I don't take it out on people too often, But like if the printer's broken and I feel free to like, you'll hear me scream at a printer like fucking piece of fuck, I lose
it. It's so funny because that is almost like therapy when you're in a subway and it's, and you hear someone just let it out. Everyone's like, yeah, like we high five to it. Where
once I was going to my therapist's office at pre-pandemic on 88th Street and the street was closed down for some reason. And the police officer was like, you have to show a piece of mail proving you live here if you want to go in. And I was like, I have therapy. And they're like, sorry. And I close to the police officers, again, wild privilege. I was like, fuck, God, fuck this, God, fucking city. Burn to the fucking ground, New York. And I turned to my right, and my therapist was standing right there.
And she, they're like, we're going to have to triple your session.
I was like, how does that make you feel? And so it's a lot of that. I don't know if I'm working on it.
Do you have road rage?
I don't drive. Thank God.
Thank God.
I'm sure I would.
Thank goodness gracious.
It's not good. It's not funny. It's not cute. Mm-hmm. And I know if I ever get more successful, like that will be the video.
I love that you got kicked out of a Starbucks. It's impressive.
But then I wrote their social media and I got $15 free credit. So
and that worth was worth it.
How many times am I going to Indianapolis Starbucks? Go fuck yourself.
I love your passion for stars as well. When was the last time you were a sloth? So you let yourself sleep in, be lazy, not do anything, watch some Netflix.
This is the one that my girlfriend would love for me to be more of a sloth, especially.
Do you judge her if she's a sloth?
Uh-huh. We struggle with it. I mean, listen, I don't judge her. I mean,
I love
she'll
honesty.
Listen to this and then we will talk about this. But
no, occasionally my fiance would be like, you want to go for a walk?
Yeah.
I'm not a fucking dog. And he's like, you've been lying here all day and you're wondering why you're depressed. And I'm like, let me be depressed. Let me be depressed.
Yeah.
Like you're actually worsening my depression because now I'm feeling judged.
Sure. She feels that from me. And I do think for me, when I was younger in high school, I did not do sports. I would binge watch things. I would watch a lot of anime. I just have a cup of noodles, Diet Coke, and I would just spend Saturday nights like that. Mm-hmm. And I played video games and stuff. And so like, I think when I look at my life, I look at that part of my life with a lot of judgment. And I get mad. We talked about this. We talked about how your dad was like a tiger dad. And I was like, I wish my parents had said, get the fuck out of bed. Mm-hmm. Go fucking do something. Because mm-hmm. you're going to look back on this and you're going to be happy you did. Mm-hmm. And so it can be very tough. I'm not an easy person in that sense where I see like a partner and I'm like, come on. Mm-hmm. You can't be doing this. You got to get out. You got to get moving. And like, I believe in some ways that can be like it's positive to have someone like that sometimes. And then other times you're like, you're just an asshole.
Yeah.
And you're just making them feel bad for enjoying
their
lives.
There is a balance. I always go, I'm having a mental health day. And Des will be like, it's called the weekend. You don't have to like make it a mental health thing. And I'm like, it's just me. And also we're always tired doing our job.
Of course.
So like, it's a thin line. I also, you know how you feel like you're making up for lost time because you were like sitting watching TV. I feel like I never had that time as a kid.
Uh-huh.
So now I like get rebellious and I'm like, I'm not going to get out of the couch today. I'm like, I'm working.
Yeah.
I'm working. But
when I get stoned, that's kind of the only way that I do it. When I get stoned, I sometimes hit a point where I'm like, oh, I'm too high to work right now. There's nothing I could do right now.
Do you write well high sometimes?
I write a lot of ideas high and then like you come back and only 10% of them are good.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be challenging because when I get high, I get very much like, I'll be talking and I'm like, wait one second. And I have to write it down. And in my mind, I'm like, this thought is amazing. But I have a lot of thoughts.
If 10% are good, you got to write them all.
If I was ever like needed to write material or when I did roast jokes and I had to get outside of the box, I'd always get high. I would like schedule like tonight's the night I get high to write my roast jokes.
John Marco is so good at roasting. Check out his YouTube videos. No, they're fucking funny. Because I feel like people come at you with the same like musical theater shit and you're just like, and then you just get them like so fucking hard where you're like, a musical theater nerd shouldn't be saying those things. What was the last time you let pride or your ego get in the way of something? This is a tough one.
I think in a lot of ways, and this goes in with me like trying to enjoy other people's greatness more. It's like I don't feel like I compliment people or like express my admiration for them as sincerely as I could because I'm so overcome with the envy of
it. Like, I've never given an authentic compliment in my life.
I tell people, but I tell it in that way where I'm like, fuck, dude.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Yeah.
Like I allow them to see that envy as opposed to being able to be like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's
kind of corny. And I feel like comics can't really accept compliments that authentic.
Yeah, they can't. But like, I still think like there's something in you that like appreciates, like even Renan saying that thing to me, I was like, oh, I didn't know. And maybe I'm wrong, but I'm like, oh, I didn't know you respected me.
Isn't it weird how one comment like saying like, oh yeah, you kill, everyone knows you kill, suddenly you have a whole new perspective of like, oh wait, everyone who I thought was making fun of me in their head thinks I'm amazing. And it just really is that story that you're telling yourself on, and these other people aren't even fucking thinking about you most of the time.
Sure.
But you're walking through, you're the main character of your life and you're creating that scene each day of like, what era are we in? You know, the first half, second half, what's happening? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Are we going to die in our sleep tonight? Is this the end? Is this the finale?
Sure.
I don't want to freak you out.
Right. Some people can't accept it. I remember once I tried to like, I was drunk and I like tried to toast Osama Siddiqui. Like I was like, I think you're really incredible. And he was like, whoa, what are we dying here? I'm like, and I was like, okay.
No, they can't.
I was just trying to have a moment. It's all right. It's fine.
I'll even like compliment a comics t-shirt and they're like, When was the last time you lusted over someone? So besides your girlfriend,
what the fuck?
Do you?
I don't know. I can't answer this question.
She's going to be so mad at you. I mean, this is a trap. You can't get out of it. But like, is there a celebrity crush you have?
Yes. What was my last celebrity crush? I mean, it is tough because no matter who it is, my girlfriend will not be happy with.
Find someone who looks just like her. Who's her celebrity look-alike?
Just like another Jew.
Natalie Portman.
Natalie Portman, sure. No, I think that might be worse. It's got to be someone very different. Or it's got to be like a guy. I think she'd be fine if it was like
Who's your male celebrity crush?
There was one recently I thought of. God damn it. I think with men, there's always a thing where I can't tell, like, am I attracted to them or do I want to be them?
Yeah.
You know, there's a thing of like,
yeah.
Because listen, I really do think if I had enough of an urge to be with a man that I would want it, that mm-hmm. it would have happened by now. Mm-hmm. There's things about men that like I just find repulsive.
Same.
When it gets close, you too, yeah.
Yeah.
When it gets like closer, like, it's just like, ugh. Like you start like noticing. Like, I think people are gross.
Yeah.
Like, there's revulsion with everyone. Breath, mm-hmm. smells, farts. And then, like, if you're attracted enough, it overcomes it.
Yes.
But with men, it doesn't overcome it. So, like, yes. If they get closer, I see their mouth, and it's like, ugh, it's not clean.
Yes.
And hair. Ugh.
Yes.
What if I, oh, okay. The woman in Succession.
The redhead?
Yeah.
Yes, Shiv.
For sure, Shiv.
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 You know, she's Australian.
I do.
Which makes her hotter and more interesting.
In yeah. I mean, especially anyone who's a good actor, you're just like...
Honestly, the amount of actors who I thought had English accents, I mean, American accents, and then I find out they're Australian blows my fucking mind. That's why I love award shows. I'm like, that guy's fucking Swedish? Like, that guy's fucking Northern Ireland? Who the...
I did an acting company with a lot of Australians, and it's just very funny because... part of the reason they're so good at it is their whole media is mostly American.
They're consuming it,
TV.
Yeah.
And like, I've watched one Australian show in my entire life.
I'm like, Outback Steakhouse, we're done. You're done.
I can't do accents to save my life.
That's so
I tried, and I was around Australians for like a year, and I was just like, nar.
Nar. Nar.
I can't do it. It's humiliating.
I can't do it. Okay, final question. Since you've been... attacking hell, it's been amazing. The devil is happy. What advice would you give to the little devils on how to cope with your hell? When you're going through it, when you're in your darkest time, what's your go-to thing to do?
I think, and I find a lot of solace in the work. And I think there's something to be said where, like, if I'm feeling shitty about career or my comedy, it's like, we'll go and write. And it focuses you on the doing of the thing as opposed to the final result of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a lot of joy cracking a joke on my own and being like, ooh, I should try that. And that will kind of make me feel good. And mm-hmm. it can be challenging because, like, especially this is having, like, a partner where she'll come to a show, and I've been trying to work on this, where I know she's watching, and it's like, she must feel anxiety. She does, because it's like, the next 15 minutes, my set is going to determine what kind of guy I'm going to be like for the rest of the night. And there's sometimes where it's hard, because if I was single or alone, if I had a bad set, like I can go home and figure out how to deal with it. And sometimes that might mean working. And I think sometimes, like, if we have like a date night after a show, it can be challenging, because after it, I feel anxiety. And I kind of look to her to almost fix it, to make me feel like I'm funny, which no one can do. Mm-hmm. No one could do. The only two solutions are another set, which might not be there, or like I need a second to go like do the work. And I think that'll take me out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I always try to remind myself of when I'm feeling that way. It's like, okay, that's fine. That's fine. This is just one night. Go back to the work. And then I think there's always that reminder of, Pete, there's some weird adage with show business of like, you're only as good as your last performance. And I think that's a toxic adage.
So toxic.
Because I'm like, well, then some nights we should kill myself because I bombed. And there can be a certain degree of like, remember the last good show, mm-hmm. and how that felt,
mm-hmm.
and just try to kind of come up with some kind of balance.
Also, think of all the people who have seen you. The last time they saw you, that's how you are in their heads. So you can't keep thinking of your last performance. Like, that's too fucking complicated and it makes no sense. Also, I did not have a great set last night because there was like all these people who were at a band concert that just like came over and were sitting in the front and like thought they were funny,
yeah.
And by the end, like, and making comments, like, just heckling the whole time, that, like, obviously the rest of the people were like, there was no way to crush that set.
Yeah, and not everyone's gonna love you. I think that's the other thing, where sometimes it's like, yeah, if you murder all the time, and I have to be cognizant of this, because, like, I will adjust to audiences,
mm-hmm.
which I think is okay to a degree, but it's like, not everyone's gonna like you.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like, I think it was recently where I had that thought where I'm trying to, and it feels childish to say, but just, like, the idea of, like, oh, I have to watch other good people and enjoy it, where I walk through my favorite comic, Anthony Jeselnik, and I'm like, oh, he's on shows where everyone is murdering. There's no way when he's on a show with John Mulaney or Earthquake,
mm-hmm.
that they're not doing amazingly, mm-hmm. but he's still amazing. Mm-hmm. So I can be good,
well,
if I'm on a show with other good people.
There are people in the crowd. You cannot just, you want to be remembered. So there'll be people in the crowd who will connect to your shit in a type of way based on their lens from their own life experiences that you can't fucking control.
Yeah.
Wow, we really got to the bottom of life here. But I also think what you said, when you say to you're not trying to just be Kim K and be like, get your ass up and work. But the fact is if you just sit in your anxiety and get frozen in it, that's all you feel. But shit is always moving. You'll have another set. You have more jokes that you can write. And it's just remember that everything's always moving.
And that's what is good about stand-up, at least, is like you get to do it so much.
Mm-hmm.
Where like acting is brutal. I mean, acting is brutal because you just don't know when the next show is, or maybe, mm-hmm. if you're in a play, that's one thing. But otherwise, like, you do something bad, you don't know when you're coming back. Stand-up is like a craft where you really just get to do it again and again and again. And that's comforting.
John Marco, where can people find you? What are the goods? Give me everything.
Since we're listening to a podcast, The Downside is my podcast, The Downside, with Marcus Areza. You've been on it. It was, mm-hmm. a great episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, we interview guests, but we talk about the negatives.
Mm.
And it becomes very Jewish. A lot of Jews have come on.
Yes.
I'm Jewish. And we dive into the things they're feeling bad about. And we complain in a fun way. Mm. And I felt like if I was going to do a weekly thing, it would have to be in that space.
Have to be in a negative energy.
And then otherwise, find me on social media. It's at Gianmarco Cerezi on all the things.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go there, you can sign up for either my texting list or the email list. I'm torn all around the country. Really, truly, for real this time. Not just Pennsylvania. And come see me live. I got a monthly show in New York called The Silver Lining at Sesh Comedy Club the first Sunday of every month. But sign up for those things and just come see me live, because that's where...
I love it. I highly recommend, especially if you're in New York City, he'll be there and he'll be in other places too. And yeah, thanks so much for listening and hell today, guys. And I'll talk to you later. Bye.